I think some companies are too utopian in the sense they say, you know, okay, we know everything. We're going to take a perfectly autonomous drone. It's going to fly, stitch a map, right? But you can also get it wrong just by saying that this technology is not going to massively disrupt and, you know, just sort of burying your head in the sand.
Welcome to the Insurance Innovators Unscripted, the show dedicated to innovation in the insurance industry. Each episode, you'll get a dose of thought leadership from the industry's top business minds, influencers, innovators, and executive leaders. If you want to transform your corner of the industry and exchange innovative ideas, you need to subscribe to this podcast. Now here's your host, Abel Travis.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Insurance Innovators Unscripted podcast, where we discuss insurance innovation. So, you know, I've gotten into a conversation ever since ITC a couple of weeks ago, and what we talked about was an organization known as Credit Karma. Now, many of you may already know about Credit Karma, but they have roughly about 80 million or so subscribers, and they're in the fintech space, and they provide free credit reports and also, you know, free tax preparation and returns online. Now, what Credit Karma is doing, and they announced this at ITC, is they are leveraging the data and government information of individuals in order to provide more tailored auto insurance quotes. You know, it's a really a data-driven approach to providing the tailored quotes to insurance that I know a lot of incumbent carriers are hoping to be able to emulate. And I know a lot of insurtechs are also hoping to get in that space as well. So in essence, you know, they're expanding that ecosystem in creating this insurance or this insurtech capability. And, you know, it's really interesting to see how this is starting to play out more broadly beyond just some of the traditional insurtechs. It's interesting, you know, you hear the word traditional carriers, and now from an insurtech perspective, you know, with fintechs and other types of organizations coming into the space, you know, I'm starting to really coin a phrase of the traditional insurtechs, you know, those that are going after the traditional things whose value proposition may be just an insurance. So, you know, it's really interesting to see this play out, and I'm really interested to see, you know, what the thoughts are around how this is going to work for our space. So, you know, if you do have any thoughts around that, shoot me an email, a message, LinkedIn, you know, let's talk about that. I'd love to hear your perspective as listeners of the podcast and, you know, potentially maybe get someone on Credit Karma on so they can talk about where their value proposition aligns with the insurance industry. So, you know, before we jump in, I want to recognize the sponsor of this episode of the podcast, and that's Vortex Legal.
Innovation in the insurance field is exciting, and Vortex Legal is a unique and proven solution to help improve a company's loss ratio by substantially reducing legal expenses. Their nationwide network of local attorneys attend the voluminous and routine and predictable hearings for a flat rate, not an hourly rate. So Vortex Legal's solution works with both staff counsel offices as well as outside law firms. They've saved many carriers millions of dollars. So if you want to learn more, just contact Jonathan Broder at 954-473-2648 or visit vortexlegal.com.
So today I'm speaking with Dan Burton, the founder and chief executive officer of DroneBase, a leading nationwide drone services provider for aerial imagery, video, and data. Dan, it's an honor to have you here on the podcast. Welcome. You know, it's great to talk to you.
Yeah, pleasure to talk to you as well. I was really looking forward to this. Thanks for having us on.
Oh, absolutely. So, hey, Dan. So, you know, I had a chance to, you know, just look into your history and what you've been doing prior to starting DroneBase. And, you know, I'd love to, you know, just give the listeners an opportunity to understand your background just in general before you started this new organization. So if you don't mind, you know, just walk us through your background and what got you to the point of what you're doing today.
Yeah, of course. Well, yeah, again, thanks for the opportunity. Yeah, I guess my introduction to drone technology was during my time in the service in the United States Marine Corps. So, you know, I was not a drone pilot, but I was an infantry officer in the Marine Corps. And during my time in the service in kind of deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan and a couple other countries, really watched drones technology sort of computerize and miniaturize. It was very similar almost to what happened with a computer. So, you know, when I got into the military, a drone was like a mainframe computer. Like it took off from a runway, landed on a runway, you know, Northrop Grumman's Global Hawk cost like over $100 million, took 55 people to fly it, even though nobody was on it, you know, really like a flying mainframe computer. And then, you know, we saw systems get smaller and smaller. So the Predator and Reaper still took off from a runway, landed on runway. But then, you know, once but then systems started getting small enough where, you know, all of a sudden our infantry battalion of 800 people could get assigned, you know, a drone that didn't even take a proper aviator to fly, and it could just launch from a little platform. And then by the time I was getting out, you know, we could send an infantryman to like a 2-week training class. They come back with a little backpack drone. We could just sort of take it, throw it, it would fly around, get aerial imagery, video, and data for us. So it sort of crash land in a field. We could just go pick it up and use it. So really just an incredible sort of democratization and decentralization of the air is what we saw in the military. So for us, like, this was just by far the most game-changing, kind of unfair advantage. It was kind of like living in the future, you know, watching drone technology advance. And for me, this is sort of from 2007 to 2011.
All right. So Dan, you know, just thinking about where you came from up until that point in 2011, you know, a little bit later, you went into industry and then you started Drone Base. So if you don't mind, you know, just talk to us about exactly what Drone Base is and also what's the value proposition for your organization.
Yeah, of course. And I know it's a bit of a long answer to your short question. So, you know, I just had seen drone technology fundamentally transform how the military operated. And I just was a dyed-in-the-wool believer that same, you know, drone technology would just as fundamentally transform how business was done. You know, really in that similar way, in the sense that just like in the military, you know, even a small unit could get access to the air and start to get data and intelligence from the air. It's the same transition in business, you know, whereas really for the past 50 years, big governments, the Fortune 50 companies like ExxonMobil have aviation departments. But really for most businesses, and certainly any sort of medium to small size business, they really don't have access to the air or can access kind of aerial imagery and data. And that's what drone technology is going to do even for small businesses. So that's just sort of that was sort of what I just truly profoundly believed and was my insight. Like any kind of founder, though, obviously the path isn't always straight. So, you know, I'm married. My wife is much more kind of level-headed and thoughtful than I am. So, yeah, after I got out of the military, you know, went to business school, I tried to drop out a couple times to start a company in the space. My wife was like, please don't do that. She had some debt from law school. I had some debt from business school. So sort of our deal together was that if, you know, I could pay off our debt, and as soon as we had paid it off, I could start a company in the space. So that's what I did. So went to business school, worked briefly in finance, and kind of did a bunch of research on drone commercialization, just trying to understand how this would all play out. And then again, just to kind of walk you through kind of how we got here. You know, the second I had our debt paid off, I quit my finance job to get into the commercial drone space. Didn't really have a company at that point, honestly. I just kind of got in my car and started just hunting down every single person doing commercial drone operations in California back in 2013, 2014. Met maybe like the 300, 400 early folks who were kind of commercial drone pilots. At that point, I was just helping them. We'd be building drone systems, so wiring them, soldering them, you know, lightly programming them, taking them out to fly. And then I just personally did probably our first 300, 400 flights myself with 5 or 6 drones that I'd made. And that was really just me. You know, and back then, I couldn't even give this away for free. I would just try to talk my way on to a work site or, you know, work with a small insurance broker to just try to do this work myself and just kind of see what was easy, see what was hard, see how businesses might use drones. And just our takeaway from that, you know, just my own personal work in this, was that it seemed like there were, you know, we had met a bunch of people who wanted to be commercial drone pilots. And then we had talked to a bunch of companies. I helped some companies buy drone fleets that never seemed to work out for them. It seemed like what companies really wanted was sort of this Amazon Web Services for drone data, where, you know, if they really like this data, they could just kind of experiment, you know, get it at a variable cost for, you know, one claim. And if they love that, just kind of scale up to 10 claims or 100 claims or 1,000 claims, with no real fixed cost, just with a, you know, a variable cost. So that's about all I knew when we kind of got started with DroneBase.
So now, so thinking about the different components of DroneBase, so, you know, with what you all are offering under your value proposition, it starts with, of course, the hardware component, and then it moves on to, I think, which is where a lot of the significant value is, and that's the software or the data component that comes along with what you are all collecting, as well as when we then begin to apply this to insurance. You know, it provides for the ability to, let's say, send out a drone and a drone pilot in, let's say, in the event of a cat event versus having to send a whole team of people to inspect roofs and buildings and so on. So, you know, that's, you know, for me, you know, one of the key benefits of leveraging drone technology within the insurance space. So, you know, I'd love to talk to you about, you know, that part of your value proposition, but then also the data side of the house and, you know, how insurance carriers are leveraging that information within their own value chain.
Yeah, of course. No, it's a great question. So, you know, if I think it just, again, kind of talking about how we got started, if we just fast forward to today, you know, DroneBase helps enterprise customers, many of them insurance companies, make better, faster decisions using drone imagery and data. And we really strive to provide that data quickly, affordably, and reliably. So, you know, just to give a very concrete example, you know, a couple large insurance carriers build into the DroneBase API as claims, you know, as underwriting requests or claims arrive just in their own system, DroneBase is getting an API call right from their back end. We will then, you know, programmatically check and clear that airspace. We'll programmatically dispatch a DroneBase drone pilot, and they will go out and complete a flight plan on that property, you know, using the DroneBase pilot app. And then that imagery and data will get sent directly back to the insurance carrier. The value prop for us, we really do love insurance. We tend to be just better, faster, and more affordable in the field than the kind of older ways of doing business. So we really love we can go in and reduce a company's costs. So again, just, you know, from a high level, you know, just to give you some sense of kind of what we're doing. So DroneBase has completed, you know, hundreds of thousands of commercial drone missions in all 50 U.S. states and over 70 different countries. And typically, if you give us, you know, for basically any address in the United States, right now we have about a 48-hour turnaround from getting that initial request to delivering that imagery with metadata back to an insurance carrier.
You know, that's pretty very impressive in terms of being able to provide that capability for insurance carriers. Now, I could also imagine that I just remember in the early days of drones, and I say the early days, but, you know, it's more around the early days of commercialization and being able to leverage it more broadly. It was challenging because of some of the laws and regulations. Now, more recently, you know, the FAA instituted the low altitude authorization and notification capability, which allowed for the use of drones more broadly and, you know, closer to different types of structures and airports. You know, just it expanded a lot of the capability usage for drones. You know, so I guess, you know, my question to you would be, you know, how has that changed your business? And then also, how has that helped you to navigate the world of insurance and not only navigate the world of insurance, but also expand your capability within the insurance field?
Look, it's a great question. I think I'm really glad you've already heard of that program. Most people have not. So I'd say that the FAA is, and it's spelled like Lank, but it's pronounced Lance, you know, typical kind of government soup, alphabet soup. But I think that's kind of underappreciated how much of a game changer that has been. So, you know, DroneBase is one of the early companies that are built directly into the FAA's Lance program. So we can, again, programmatically check and clear or get authorization to restricted airspace. And what that's meant for us was that before Lance, we were typically saying no to 25 to 30% of all requests. because they were in restricted airspace. And so, you know, that's really painful for us. Not only do we have to just say no outright to kind of 30% of our revenue, but just because we had to say no so often, a lot of times insurance carriers still had to maintain kind of the whole other way of doing business. So they couldn't really see all the cost reductions they could get by using drones just because they still had to have kind of two programs going at the same time. So we've been really excited to see, you know, in areas where Lance is active, we've been able to take, you know, our nose down from kind of 30% to under 1%. So, you know, 99% plus of the time we're able to say yes to the claims and underwriting requests we're getting from insurance carriers. So that's, I mean, it's hard to overstate how much of a game changer that is. And so just for sense of timing, you know, Texas, Oklahoma, kind of the south, parts of the southeast were the first region to roll on April 30th. They just rolled on kind of the northeast. I think the Midwest is the last region to get activated, but the entire U.S. will be on the Lance program by end of September. So it's been a really encouraging and exciting development.
Yeah, I could imagine that being a game changer for you all. At the same time, I could see clearly that this would be a game changer for carriers, especially as they start to focus on leveraging new types of innovation to become much more efficient in the way that they work within their workflows, right? And then, you know, that gives them then the opportunity to then deploy their resources to where it's truly needed and where there's not a level of technology to help them, you know, become more efficient and from that perspective.
Yeah, no. I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. I'd say that generally in insurance, we feel we have a very strong value prop there. You know, I'd say that we typically take about 48 to 72 hours from a request compared to, you know, a week or weeks for a typical insurance adjuster. We tend to be in the mid to low hundreds of dollars, typically, you know, much more affordable than a typical kind of person, roof assist going on a ladder. And then the insurance carrier, you know, instead of getting kind of a handwritten note or a thumbs up, thumbs down, they get sort of a, you know, they get an image set with metadata attached that serves as an audit trail of that inspection kind of throughout the perpetuity of that asset or that claim. So, you know, we feel really good about our value prop for insurance. So, yeah, anytime we had to say no because restricted airspace, you know, it really was painful for us. And so it's been really exciting to be able to say yes, you know, almost all the time.
Yeah, and I think that really, you know, could or is helping with the expansion of the capabilities as to what you can do for the clients that you serve. You know, so I could see this, and I'm pretty sure you all already are doing a lot of business with real estate organizations and other organizations that need the technology around what you all are providing. Now, you know, I'm gonna flip to the sort of the coverage side of insurance, just knowing that, you know, a lot of carriers with organizations that tend to leverage drones, or if they own a drone, carriers tend to either exclude the property damage as well as the liability and that comes along with that and the different components of liability, right? Because they don't want to take it on based on what that's being used for. Now that could potentially be a hindrance for an organization to own a drone and to pilot it on their own. But I could see, you know, for an organization like yourself, that not being an issue because they're sort of renting the capability from you versus owning it themselves. So, you know, have you seen that also play out with other organizations that you provide your services to? And are they seeing sort of that value and the benefit from you all being able to do it versus them having to own the capability themselves?
Yeah, no, again, a really great question. So, you know, I think really DroneBase as a company, I think all we're trying to do, you know, using like businesses using drones today tends to be really slow, really expensive, and really hard to get your head around the compliance and risk. So we're just trying to flip all that on its head, and we're making a lot of headway to that, just trying to make it, you know, really fast, very affordable, and just very reliable help mitigate risk for our partners. So yeah, I think we've really found a lot of good success just you're working with companies just to get them the relevant data that they need to help to make a decision, and really like letting all the business of running a very complicated scale drone operation to us. So, you know, we have, like I've said, you know, we've completed, it's been interesting for me because, again, like I said, when I started in this industry, I helped companies buy drone fleets, and it just seemed like that never worked out for a bunch of reasons. I mean, first of all, the systems come out at kind of 2x like the iPhone rate. Like every 6 months, a system comes out that's like twice as powerful and, you know, a little less money. So every time people spend a ton of money buying a bunch of drone systems, they get obsolete very quickly. You know, the second point, I guess, is that it does take, you know, a lot of folks can kind of get a drone up in the air. But really to understand the kind of nuances of mixing autonomous and manual flight to really get that proper data capture every time, you know, it takes a lot of thought and technology there. And we've done that over hundreds of thousands of drone flights. And then finally, you know, as you say, I think that just the kind of compliance and risk elements of this, you know, again, we've done hundreds of thousands of drone flights. We stay very close with our regulator, and we build best in class technology, you know, into the relevant kind of regulations that are coming out. We have had to go out and get a lot of high, you know, fairly expensive drone insurance policies that are a great investment for us. We're happy to make that investment, but you know, we are the professionals in this, right? I mean, so we feel like the risk and liability should sit with us. We're happy for it to sit there. We just really want you know, insurance carriers to be able to get this data in a fast, affordable, reliable way. So yeah, I think all of that does tend to argue for, you know, a service provider being the best option, you know, in 99% of cases. And I think, yeah, as you can imagine, insurance carriers obviously tend to be fairly conservative, risk-averse organizations. So helping them get comfort around that, and really having that liability rest on the drone company is really the appropriate thing. I wouldn't expect a large insurance carrier to know how to run a scaled commercial drone operation.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. So when I look at the insurance transformation that's been occurring within our industry, you know, I would arguably fit your organization in the category of insurtech when applied to the insurance industry, but insurtech 1.0, right? So for me, I see the differentiator between insurtech 1.0 and 2.0 is, you know, with 1.0 there was a lot of focus on leveraging hardware as a part of innovation, like, you know, using drones and so on. But then as a part of 2.0, the evolution of that is the data usage, platform innovation, and, you know, essentially then going and creating somewhat of an ecosystem capability. So for you all, even though I said 1.0, I think it's probably somewhere in the middle between 1 and 2 with the hardware innovation for the industry and then the data component that you all are providing. Now, you know, how do you see yourselves evolving as innovation and transformation just continue to impact this insurance industry? How do you see yourselves playing within that environment?
No, again, I love all the questions you're asking. I can tell, you know, it's just very, 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 very much similar to how we think about this. Just like you pointed out, I'd say that really the past 4 years of our company we are a technology company. We're mostly software engineers. And really the preponderance of our technology and engineering has gone towards that 1.0 just problem, right? And that's just building out the infrastructure. Like there's a network of satellites. There are people who run kind of fleets of planes. There just was not the infrastructure before we built it to go run commercial drone operations at scale. So we had to sort of build all that pipe and all that plumbing, you know, via the drone-based API and via the drone-based pilot network. And, you know, just attacking those axes of making this quicker, more affordable, more reliable, you know, every single month. We still have ways to go on that to get it exactly where we want it to be. And then as you point out, you know, I think the whole second half and second arc of our company really is getting smarter every single flight that we do and starting to leverage the data capabilities and the data store, you know, that we're building out as a company. So yeah, I think if I had to kind of look in my crystal ball and see how this goes, I'd say that you can get it. I think that people can either be maybe too pessimistic or too utopian. You know, I think that some people, like in the sense that some people can kind of say, I think some companies are too utopian in the sense they say, you know, okay, we know everything. We're going to take a perfectly autonomous drone. It's going to fly, stitch a map. It itself is going to recognize all the hail via computer vision and spit out like a perfect claim every single time. That's probably pretty utopian for 2018, right? But you can also get it wrong just by saying that this technology is not going to massively disrupt insurance and, you know, just sort of burying your head in the sand. So I think that our take generally has been that, you know, we try to be pretty humble. We know what we're really good at, and that is, you know, running commercial drone operations in a better, faster, cheaper way to acquire this data. I mean, what we've seen most success with now is, you know, us, you know, DroneBase partnering with insurance companies or our partners in insurance, you know, us running the field operation, and then them taking the incredible knowledge that they have of adjusting claims and really working from just a basic image set that we provide to help make that determination. And that can be fairly kind of manual and analog. But yeah, I think you have to envision a future where we're getting better and better, or our partners are getting better and better at kind of synthesizing or detecting the damage that we're seeing kind of over and over and over again, and just helping that organization, you know, that carrier, get faster and faster at determining that claim and getting the ultimate policyholder paid out.
Yeah, you know, so I'd love to just, you know, continue down this vein, right? As we think about how you all sort of went from one layer of, you know, just building the components all the way through to leveraging the data and having carrier, or creating the data and having carriers leverage that. Now when I think about, you know, other things that's happening out there. So you mentioned you know, aerial imagery and so on, and I'm not sure if you guys are doing this yet, but you know, I could also imagine, you know, this getting taking a step further, and then also leveraging other types of technology like artificial intelligence and deep machine learning, and, you know, computer visioning, as you know, as you mentioned a little bit, you know, vision technology, to then start to synthesize this information in a way that can then produce other types of things that these carriers that might be valuable to the carrier. So, you know, like hail patterns or you know, things of that nature. So, you know, as you look into the future of what you're hoping to accomplish with this organization, you know, are you looking at the in that direction where you'll begin to start leveraging these other types of technologies to continue to increase the value proposition of what you all are doing?
Yeah, no, I mean, again, I think the answer, of course, has to be yes, just in the vein that, like I said, our mission at DroneBase, just helping our enterprise customers make a better, faster decision using drone data. So, yeah, I think obviously looking for the same types of anomaly and sort of inspection after inspection after inspection, you know, obviously lends itself to using something like computer vision or machine learning to just better and more quickly, more programmatically, you know, identify those types of damage that we see over and over and over. I don't presume that, you know, DroneBase as a company will ourselves come up with every answer for that. We have good analytics partners that have, you know, are very deep in solving certain specific of these problems. But it's absolutely something that, you know, we think about, and that's what the answer, you know, will look like over time. So yeah, I think that we really have a mission of getting, we really have a goal of kind of getting smarter every single flight, and just getting better and better about pulling data and insight from all the imagery that we capture.
Absolutely. You know, so I just wonder, you know, as we take the perspective of innovation, I always like to make this really tangible for those that are listening. So, you know, what are some of the challenges that you typically tend to face on a day-to-day basis? And then what are some of the innovative ways that you all get over some of these challenges that you face daily?
Yeah, look, we've learned a tremendous amount the past 3-4 years, and we've learned a tremendous amount with our customers in insurance. So, you know, I think both a big challenge, but a very rewarding opportunity was we were probably working more heavily than any other drone company by orders of magnitude last year in hurricanes Harvey and Irma. And I mean, just again, for example, like my best friend lived in Houston. His entire house was flooded. He literally was walking out the door as, you know, water was pouring out of his windows and totally lost his home. He still doesn't live in his home, right? And so, you know, by insurance carriers using drone base, you know, we were able to help those carriers get an insurance claim paid out, you know, within a couple of days instead of 10, 20, 30 days. So in those cases, that was, you know, getting a family, money in their pockets after their whole lives had just been destroyed. So that was incredibly, you know, rewarding for us. But yeah, those are tough logistical problems. I mean, as you probably, I'd say that, you know, insurance has really made us better in the sense that we've had, you know, we really have to have that Verizon LTE like coverage in the United States. So we really do service every U.S. address. So we have to be both broad across the U.S., you know, deep within cities, and then able to scale in catastrophe like situations. And yeah, I think we felt very proud that we were doing kind of thousands upon thousands of drone flights and inspections during Harvey and Irma. And we really didn't, you know, we were always able to have capacity, you know, for our customers. But, you know, just making sure we can, you know, fulfill that capacity and staying ahead of kind of where customer demand is, that itself is a big logistical challenge. And then I would say, like, also for insurance, it's been really a good learning point for us is that, you know, we're very obsessed with excellent data capture just for reliability. So, you know, again, like I said, a key component of what we're trying to do is make drone service reliable. So I'd say that has two elements to it. The first is just data capture. So, you know, I think we're proud to say now that 99.5% of the time we capture the imagery and data correctly in the first flight, which really matters to, you know, get a good answer for our customer. I think we, until we'd worked heavily in insurance, though, I think we underappreciated the second part of reliability, which is just providing an excellent service as well. You know, we really feel privileged as we work with insurance carriers. We really are their face to their policyholder. That may be the only time a policyholder really interacts with their carrier is when someone comes out to do that inspection. So, you know, we really admire how insurance carriers, you know, laboriously, painstakingly really care about that interaction, and that interaction is of equal importance to getting the data captured correctly. And that's everything from, you know, properly addressing the policyholder to having a great interaction with them and answering their questions. You know, for a lot of folks, is the first time they've ever seen a drone, certainly the first time they've ever kind of had a drone impact their own personal life. A lot of people actually want to be there for the inspection and, like, will stand outside and take pictures. So it's that interaction is kind of sacred both to us and to the insurance carriers. And we've learned, you know, how to make sure we're honoring that relationship as well. And it's something that our carrier customers have really, you know, I think taught us and instructed us on. And it's just meant a lot to us as well.
Yeah, I think you really hit the nail on the head, right? Because with carriers, you know, to the point that you made, most of the times when they're interacting with a policyholder is, number one, when the policyholder is paying that premium. I mean, that may not even be in person. It can be digitally. Or when there's a claim and when that policyholder has to file a claim. And so it actually averages out to something like 1.5 times or something like that per year.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
When you look over the average, but as a part of what you all are doing, you know, coming in and
you know, being the face of the carrier as they're engaging or as you're engaging to help along the lines of assessing those locations for damage and so on, you truly do become the face of the carrier. So that 99% plus accuracy actually becomes really important, because that's the expectation from the policyholder, that with you being the face, with you being that interaction through the policyholder to the carrier, that it's a positive and a successful interaction. So, you know, for you all to have hit almost a 100% target, you know, 99, I think you said 99.5 or so.
Yeah, 99.5.
Yep. 99.5. I think that's really commendable. And honestly, I don't even know where you go from here because there's not much room, you know, to grow that 99.
Oh, there's a lot in that 0.5%. There's a lot in there.
You know, so but no, I do think that's really commendable, and that brings me to the question of, you know, in order to capture that 0.5, you have to be able to understand what needs to get done, and part
right.
of that could be you know, having a culture of innovation within your organization to be able to recognize what those things are. So, you know, just if you don't mind, you know, talk to me about how you create and maintain a culture of innovation within DroneBase.
Sure. That's another great question. So, yeah, look, I care a lot about culture. I think I've learned that from various places that I've worked, probably with the Marine Corps kind of being the organization that had the strongest and very, you know, very well-defined culture. And so, yeah, I think that as employees join DroneBase, you know, we really have a kind of a very definite culture that we like to share with them, and that's kind of like the first thing we typically do when we bring anyone in is to make sure that folks are aware of that culture and kind of you know, are excited to participate in it. So, like, the four things that we stress to folks are, you know, first, we expect kind of passion to build a category, you know, to build the category defining drone company. So, I mean, it's like we have to be innovative, right? It's not even like we can say, okay, let's just copy this company, but let's do it all online. So it's like 80% more of, you know, it's like 80% less of the price or something. It's like, this is entirely new. No one has built a large drone company yet. No one's built a large drone services company. No one's built a API for drone services. No one's built a pilot network. Like, we were the first person to do, we were the first company to build all those things. So for us, like, it's not even enough just to say, hey, we're just going to copy this person who's ahead of us and just do it a little better. Like, we truly need to 0 to 1 innovate on new ideas. So, you know, that's just, it's just sort of like an innovate or die for us. That's kind of a non-negotiable thing. You know, from there, I think that, like, you know, the second point we really believe in is just ownership. That's in the Marine Corps, we kind of thought of that as sort of decentralized command. That's just for us, just we try to hire the smartest people we can find, most talented people we can find, tell them, you know, where we want to go, but do not tell them how to get there. You know, just give them all the tools and all the authority to make their own decisions. And 99% of the time, like, they will make a better decision than me. I think I'm kind of out of, like, the good ideas no longer come from me. I don't know if I'm just out of them or if I have smarter people working here now, but it's like all the good ideas come from the people who are kind of close to the metal, whether that's a software engineer, you know, working in the code base, or one of our operations team that are seeing all these kind of hail damage images coming in every day, or someone from the sales side who is sitting with the customer and hearing what they need. You know, that's where all the good ideas will come from. And then I guess just to your innovation point, you know, our third value is really humility. And to me, that humility just means that you're willing to learn from others, adapt and grow. You're willing to learn from your mistakes. You know, it's like the flip side would be arrogance, meaning we think we have the right answer and we stop learning, which would be fatal for us. So, you know, the drone, like, just the underlying drone technology changes so fast that even if we think we have the right answer in August of 2018, I guarantee you that'll be the wrong answer in August 2019. So we just always have to stay humble and just keep learning. And then finally, I think just from an innovation perspective, we really like to focus on, you know, the value of just respect. We have people here from kind of all backgrounds. All are welcome. Everybody has kind of a different story they bring to the company. And I think we really want to respect each other's ideas, skills, and backgrounds. And you know, through that diversity, we get to the kind of the right, you know, a right and exponential outcome that we wouldn't get if we didn't kind of incorporate everyone's backgrounds in our company. So, you know, that may be a little kind of, you know, that's how we think about it. I think we've done a good job of continuing on as an innovative company. It's really like it's not an option for us. We have to be that way. And I think that comes from trying to have a strong culture.
Absolutely. You know, and I could, you know, see what you all apply to enabling that innovative company. Be advice to others that are listening to this, you know, to take sort of that same approach to look at the culture, to engage others, you know, sort of everything that you've talked about. So, you know, I definitely could see that as a sort of a very important way for others to achieve some of that same balance and innovation that you all have done. So, hey, you know, Dan, so, you know, once, you know, I just want to say thank you for, you know, your time taken here today and just to talk about the value proposition of Drone Base and what that means to innovation and transformation in the insurance industry. Now, you know, if there are listeners that would want to learn more about what you all are doing with Drone Base or even get in contact with you or your staff, you know, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, of course. Just please ask you just to go to dronebase.com. If you are an FAA certified Part 107 pilot, please check out our pilots page. If you're anyone in the insurance industry, please just have a really simple form you can fill out and we'll be in touch. We have really enjoyed working in the insurance industry. It's not, you know, not my background per se. And again, we're humble enough to know kind of what we're good at, but we've really learned a lot and benefited by, you know, working in this industry of carriers who really deeply care for their policyholders and you know, are there for them when things go really, really wrong with someone's home. It's been a rewarding industry for us to work in and learn from, and we're really excited to continue our work in 2018, 2019, and beyond.
Absolutely. Well, Dan, you know, once again, I do want to say thank you. You know, I'm sure that folks that are listening will get a lot of value from what we talked about here, and just looking forward to following what you all are doing in the insurance industry.
Absolutely. Yep. And anyone listening, please do reach out, just dronebase.com, and we'd love to start a conversation.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Insurance Innovators Unscripted Podcast. Now, if this is your first time listening, just hit that subscribe button on whatever platform you're using so you can automatically get it to your feed and get the new episodes every week. So, you know, hopefully you get a lot out of these discussions. And if you ever want to chat, just shoot me a message. So, you know, once again, I just want to say thank you for listening. I truly appreciate it. And, you know, we'll see you next week.